Well, we went through this on the continuing resolution debate that came at us for some 40-plus days here in Congress, beginning prior to March 4th, midnight deadline. And it was clear to many of us, and it should have been clear to every one of us, that the military pay was the lack of military pay was a threat that caused a significant number of the freshmen, especially, to vote for a CR agreement that they might not have voted for otherwise. And when we see that used as a tool, and we start to think about the immorality of withholding military pay until we can reach some kind of a political deal, Congressman Louie Gohmert of Texas raised that issue emphatically, and he is 100% right that you don't use military pay or even the threat of it as a political pawn to try to accomplish what you're trying to accomplish through the negotiations. And so that's step one. And the second piece of this bill, the Promises Act, is the full faith and credit component that is was authored by Tom McClintock of California and also Pat Toomey in the Senate from Pennsylvania. It put both of those thoughts together and refined them a little bit and made them contemporary so that they fit. So the Promises Act says this, that our troops will be paid on time every time by law, whether we reach a funding gap, which would be the case of a CR negotiation that we saw in March and April, or whether we reach the debt ceiling and a limit on the debt ceiling. And so that you look at the priorities, and it'll have to be prioritized. Right now, the president would do the prioritization in absence of law, and it's pretty much vacant out there. And so will the president use it as for political reasons? I would say I'm concerned about that. He already is using these things. He's threatened that he said that he can't guarantee that military pension or Social Security checks come on time. Well, that's a message out there to retired people on fixed income that they need to put pressure on their Republican member of Congress to raise the debt ceiling. And I don't want that kind of leverage to be used. I don't think we should be scaring anybody. I don't think we should be scaring our military families and our troops out in the field. Do not need to be wondering if their family is going to be paid exactly on time. And neither do the people who have loaned us money. So having gone through the tough economic years of the farm crisis of the 80s adds some clarity for me. The first priority was for me to pay my help. Our employees in our construction company needed to be paid on time every time. I couldn't ask them to come to work if they weren't going to be paid on time. That's the same as the people protecting our shores, our security, and our liberty, our troops. Second thing is, you pay the interest at the bank, and you pay the principal that's due. And you can negotiate on the principal, but you must pay the interest that's due on time every time. That's what this Promises Act does. It keeps the full faith and credit of the United States of America and guarantees it. And it also keeps our faith with the American military whose lives are on the line and their families. That's the sum total of the Promises Act. And if it becomes law, that changes the dynamics of the negotiations between the president and the Speaker of the House, because neither one of these can be used as a tool thereafter.
As I was reading through the synopsis of the Promises Act, I got to thinking about the civilian personnel at DOD, and I imagine if they were to read what I read, they'd be saying, well, what about us? We're the acquisition folks that make sure the uniformed people have what they need. Is there a provision there for them, too?
We didn't put that provision in. I mean, you know, people should think about this in terms of the president would make these decisions. And if we start down through the line and we start adding more and more exceptions to this, we arrive at having spent all the money and we've just created an argument rather than solve the problem. And so I only went to the two highest priorities, and I didn't go below that. And I would tell you behind that would come a priority of, Social Security and Medicare would fit into that category too, and the essential services of our defense. I'm very strong on national defense. But, these are not business decisions that are being made here in Washington. These are political decisions. And so when you introduce a bill like this, it isn't that it's designed to manage the sequence and the priority of the payment of all of government. It's designed to take away a couple of political tools that they're threatening to use and actually are using within this debate that we have now.
I think folks forget that you as a member are just as aware as people like me in the chattering classes that there are federal installations, there are federal offices in your district, and that you have constituents that will be affected in the event that something doesn't happen with the debt limit. Talk about some of the things that go on at the federal government level, but that live in the 5th District in Iowa.
Well, you know, the easy ones to toss out there are Social Security, Medicare, so our health care providing institutions, I believe all of them deal with Medicare patients. And that's a funding stream that, you know, they might threaten to stop out of the White House. And the post office situation is a little bit grayer area. I don't know whether that'd be something that might be controlled or not. They've got their own budget and their funding stream to work with. I think that might be a while before that would see those kind of cuts. Social Security checks, the president's already implied that they may not receive theirs on time. I believe, the most senior congressional district in America out of all 435. And so they were very, very sensitive out there with regard to that. Also, the USDA, the U.S. Department of Agriculture. We may be the, you know, Californians have an argument that they have some of the top ag districts in the country, and on a dollar per acre basis, that's true. But I don't know of any district that is more dependent upon agriculture than the area of Iowa that I represent. And much of that business is connected to the Farm Service Administration, of course, a division of the USDA. If that all stopped and the Farm Service Administration, the FSA offices closed, that would put a halt to a lot of the decision making that goes on in all of agriculture. And then it impacts through everything that we have. You know, all new wealth comes from the land, and that means that you either raise it out of the soil or you mine it out of the earth. I guess you could seine some fish out of the sea or raise some algae there. But beyond that, we have to build our economy based on those fundamentals of most of it coming out of the earth and the soil. And then we produce the food, clothing, and shelter out of that. And then we value add to it. And that's what pays for the doctors, the lawyers, the teachers, and the professionals that we have. But it's rooted back to the land, and if our land stopped producing, then eventually the chain reaction covers everything we do. So I'm very much attentive to how a government shutdown would affect our overall economy and our quality of life. But I also set the highest priorities, pay our troops first, and guarantee that we keep our credit second.